Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome again to another edition of Liberty Unbridled. I am your host, Ken Molman, and this is the My View Matters Radio Network. We've got a full show lined up tonight, so if you'd like to call in, remember we are doing the new format where we let me spout off for a half hour for the first half of the show, and then we take your calls and we bring co-host Dave on and we all discuss what we've just talked about, and anything else that you think is extremely important that we may have missed. The number here, in case you want to listen in, that is an option as well. If you're having trouble, sometimes people have trouble with the player on the website. And so if you do have that problem, you can actually call in and listen to the show with the same number, calling 858-683-1326. And you can call in, and if you want to talk, you can press the 1 key, and that will put you in the queue to talk. But otherwise, I'm just going to assume that you're just along for the ride and listening. And we do have people that do that, so that's not abnormal at all, actually. So if you really want to say something, make sure you hit that 1 key. And usually Blog Talk will tell me that you want to talk. So every once in a while it acts badly, but it is what it is. To get things started, as always, we start with the randomly generated political rhetoric from the political rhetoric generator. Tonight's randomly generated political rhetoric is, when I'm elected, I'll make sure high-paid lobbyists and Iranian extremists can't undermine our brave police force. Yeah, I know. It's silly. They are. They're, you know, just silly. Let's see here. And then I had, where'd it go? Oh, no. I've lost my spurious correlation that I was going to do. Where'd it go? Ah, here it is. Tonight's spurious correlation is U.S. spending on science, space, and technology correlates with suicides by hanging, strangulation, and suffocation. It's a really scary line. Obviously, one does not cause the other, but that is kind of an interesting weird thing. And in case you're new to the show, the reason we do these spurious correlations is to really emphasize that correlation is not causation, and that that's an important thing to realize, because there's a lot of people out there who push disinformation, and the more savvy of the disinformation pushers will use correlation and call it causation. And there is a huge difference between things that seem to look the same and things that are the same, or cause and effect. Speaking of things that are the same, one of the other things I just wanted to point out, you know, another correlation here, the precipitation in Tennessee correlates with the precipitation in Kentucky. Now, in that scenario, obviously, we're neighbors, and so the precipitation is going to correlate, not because Kentucky affects Tennessee's weather or Tennessee affects, again, you'd have to be able to, you know, actually do real science and prove all that, but the point is that there is a difference between correlation and causation, and sometimes things sound better than others. You know, sometimes they're not as ridiculous as suicides and U.S. spending. But although one could make the case that our spending is suicidal, that's not the point. The point is that correlation and causation are two separate things, and it's a very important distinction. The reason I bring this up all the time, and it kind of ties right in nicely to the first topic of the show tonight, our primary topic, the reason I always bring this up is because of the whole smoking ban thing. In the fight, you'll often hear that cigarette smoking causes XYZ, or secondhand smoke causes XYZ. And the reality is that causation cannot be proved in those scenarios. That is a fact. Because in order to be able to prove causation, you would have to engage in extremely unethical and immoral practices that actually were done. The infamous Dr. Mengele from Nazi Germany, where you take two twins who are obviously identical twins, so they're genetically the same, and you expose them, you expose them to two separate stimuli. One is the control, and the other is the experiment subject. And he did all kinds of ugly, horrible things to kids that were twins. It's a terrible, ugly, horrible thing. Why? We don't do those things. Now, Mengele was able to prove causation on a number of things by doing that. However, that form of science is horrid, absolutely abhorrent, and we don't want to see that. So we can show correlation on things, certainly, and you can amass quite a bit of correlation. But at the end of the day, as some of my liberal friends were very apt to note for a while there, you know, what you're really looking at in each of those scenarios is not points of data, but anecdotes. There's no control group to have data. And as such, as they like to say, the plural of anecdote is not data. So the Kentucky U.S. Supreme Court, not Kentucky U.S., the Kentucky Supreme Court issued a ruling on June 19th, so a few days ago, that basically the boards of health in Kentucky that are appointed out of Frankfurt do not have the authority to create new regulations. Essentially what they said was that while previous rulings have given the Louisville Board of Health some leeway in creating new regulations of their own, that board, the one in Louisville, because Louisville is a city of the first class and has its own special set of rules, that board is directly appointed by the Louisville Metro Council. And since the voters of Louisville vote on the Louisville Metro Council, the recourse, if you do not like what the Board of Health is doing, is to vote out the Metro Council. Now, I'm not real hip to even that concept. I think anyone who is able to legislate or tax should be directly accountable to those that they're legislating against or taxing. But it is important because our Constitution actually defines and protects individual counties and cities against laws. What that means is that if different boards of health are applying different standards and are applying different rules, they're actually violating the state constitution. Now, they did not go there in this case, which was unfortunate. I would have liked to have seen that specifically outlined. But they did say that the recourse here is that essentially the difference between this case and other cases was that the boards of health are not directly elected. And even in the case of in the case of Louisville, the board is elected from the governing body that is directly elected. But in the case of the other 119 counties, the board is appointed by the state. And so as a result, they cannot create new legislation because there is too far of a separation between the Board of Health and the voters of that county. And so that's the decision that's been rendered. It was a 6-0 decision. It was a slam dunk. There was one abstention. Justice Keller abstained. Now, Keller had voted in 2-1 decision at the Court of Appeals, and after that decision, she was promoted to the state Supreme Court. And so she recused herself from this case because she had ruled on it previously, I guess. I don't know that for sure, but that makes sense. And as a result, it was a 6-0 decision reversing the Court of Appeals 2-1 decision that basically reinstates the original judgment of the Bullitt County judge who said that the fiscal court or the legislative bodies have the right to legislate and that the boards of health only have the right to enforce what has been properly legislated and do not have the right to create new legislation. There is a really good quote at the end of this case, and I'm going to read it here. I've been on a couple of different talk shows over the past, came out, and I'll be on a few more coming up. Because of my work with Northern Kentucky Choice. Our group has been a consumer advocacy group. It's basically a handful of folks that a core that were upset at the idea that they were going to try to pass a smoking ban when we felt that there was no need for one, that the free market was already resolving the issue, and we were proposing alternatives to the ban. And so because of my involvement in that, I've been contacted about this ruling and what it means and whatnot. So let me read this quote here, because I really believe that this gets to the crux of the decision that the Supreme Court made here in Kentucky. Aggregate power of administrative agencies over the recent decade, if left unchecked, invites the ascendance of a fourth branch of government, the regulatory state. The trustees of our state and federal constitution must bear this burden with pragmatic resolve so that government may effectively function in the 21st century without abdicating sovereignty. The balancing of freedoms is the most delicate task of a democracy, for which there is no judicial panacea. A free people vest that onerous duty to those whom they have entrusted through the elective process. So that's the quote that I like to read when it comes to this particular case. Basically, they understand that we need to, I mean, it's pretty powerful language. We need to be sure that the regulatory bodies do not get so powerful that they're just running everything. That was my whole point on the Bullitt County case. It had nothing to do with smoking. It had everything to do with being concerned about the rise of unelected bureaucracies with unlimited power. And there are others out there. There are other fights going on right now outside of the health department issue and the smoking ban issue. And, you know, not saying it's good or bad, but these library boards, that's another area where right now there is litigation ongoing to challenge the ability of a library board to be able to raise taxes. And that's another case where the, well, it's a slightly more complicated case, but essentially the Kentucky Department of Library and Archives narrows down a field of candidates to three, and then they provide that the judge executive with a list of three, and the judge executive of that county must choose from one of those three. He cannot choose anyone he wants to. He can only choose one of those three. And so, you know, it's kind of one of those, hey, you can buy any car, you can buy a car in any color you want as long as it's black scenarios. And as a result, there's been a big fight over the library's ability to continue to raise taxes. And that's still ongoing. I believe that this case will actually have an effect on that one because, again, there is no direct or even quasi-direct accountability to the voters because the judge executive is told you can only choose from these three people, not from anyone you want in your county. You can only choose from these three people. And that's not cool. I mean, anyway, I think that this is a very important ruling, and it's one that is very good in general. I would have liked to have seen it be stronger. I would have liked to have seen stronger language. I would have liked to have seen additional information as far as the constitutionality and the constitutional backing of this decision, because I really believe that the part of the Constitution requiring that laws be uniformly applied actually was in play here as well. And I did not see that referenced in this case, unfortunately, in the decision anyway. Bullitt County Health Department's smoking ban has been overturned. There are a handful of other boards of health who had previously slapped smoking bans in without any sort of legislative authority. Now, in those scenarios, and this is what's really happening here, just so you folks know, what happens is that the people who are elected to the fiscal court want to pass a smoking ban, but they're afraid. They know that it's unpopular with their people. And so rather than upset the apple cart, they go to the county board of health and say, hey, buddy, pal, friend, hey, man, can you just slap this in for us? And, you know, then it'll all be good, man, you know, because we won't complain. And, you know, then we can just blame government. Because, you know, certainly government doesn't have enough black eyes from its own stupidity. You know, you can just cause it to intentionally take some more black eyes. That's not real bright. But anyway, the point is, that's why in other counties there's never been this suit before. Why no other counties had challenged the health department's ability to pass a smoking ban? Because the reality is the fiscal court wanted one but was too chicken to do it themselves. And make no mistake, many county and city governments out there are run by chickens. It's amazing. Just amazing. Anyway, so it looks like, based on what I'm seeing here, that at a minimum, Madison County, let's see, who else? Madison gets overturned. Clark and Woodford counties get overturned. They're like, well, we don't know if it gets overturned or not. Well, it does. I mean, the first time it gets challenged, this case ruling gets applied, and you're done. So it's overturned. I think there's a few other counties that want that route, too, where the fiscal court or whatever went to the Board of Health and wink, wink, nod, nod, yeah, you guys just take care of it for us, and it was done. And apparently, my understanding, the story behind the story, is that that's actually what had happened in Bullock County. And it started out that the Bullock County fiscal court was on board. But in the process of getting this all written up and the process of getting this all done, it's an election. People won. People were sitting on the fiscal court. And those new people didn't like that their new, really hard and been elected to, was being usurped by a county board of health. Not really realizing, or maybe they did realize and didn't care, that their predecessors had actually helped orchestrate the whole thing anyway. In fact, maybe that was why, part of the reason why they were against it. Now, I've heard in Bullock County that it is likely that one or more cities will pass some sort of smoking ban. It won't be the full ban that was there before, because the full ban that was there before, because it had been passed by a regulatory body and not a legislative body, was a ridiculously strict ban. It was probably the strictest ban in Kentucky, the one they passed in Bullock County. It was nuts. And so as a result, I should stop there and just say that's the reason why we have the legislative process, right? Because somebody proposes something and we're like, wait, what? And you hammer out legislatively through the process. You kick out the crazy town stuff, right? Okay, that stuff there, that's just crazy town. It's gone. And then, you know, everywhere that's legislated in a ban has put an exception in, based on the needs or worries or wants of the local community. And it's funny because that's become a rallying cry for the pro-ban people. Oh, my gosh, it's too hard to figure out. There's too many laws. I don't understand. Well, under that reasoning, maybe we should just eliminate state and county and city governments and just be under one federal government? I mean, that's ignorant. That's a terrible, terrible set of logic. Whatever. Anyway, the point is, we do have the legislative process. We have it for a reason. We do not want unelected bureaucrats deciding our fate, period. And I think we're going to see more and more people understand and start to stand up against this. And, you know, the problem is that you've got federal level. And I think that's actually part of this, too. I think a message was being sent to the feds as well. I think that's why they mentioned the feds. You know, the EPA is crippling our state. The rate at which they are shutting down our coal is killing us. Now, make no mistake, I am not for pollution. I think we've been over this on the show before. I'm not for pollution, but thank God, you know, it's not like we're producing more than we used to. As long as we're scaling back, as long as we're moving the right direction, isn't that good enough? Can't we slowly implement processes and make things so that, you know, we're not causing a crazy shock to the system? I mean, that's the whole point of incrementalism, and that's why it works, is because when you try to cram radical stuff through, people naturally reject large changes, large sweeping changes. People are like, wait, what? They can't fully grasp it. It's confusing. It's scary. And naturally, I'm convinced it's instinctual. People reject it. And that's why you do things incrementally. But it's also good policy. I mean, you don't want to radically change the world overnight. You don't want to make it so that a whole bunch of people lose their jobs, which is what's happening. You don't want to cause electric rates to jump by 30% over the course of 2 years, which is what's happening. You don't want to cause businesses to move away to other places, to different business climates, which is what's happening. You don't want to destroy a local economy over ideology. Now, I get it. I do. I get the desire for radical change. I get that desire. That's not the change I'm looking for, per se. But you have to look at things pragmatically and look at the damage that these radical changes are causing. And it's an important lesson for our liberty folks, too. You can't just slap liberty in and expect everything to be happy hunky-dory. There's a lot of people who don't get it. It's going to take time, and that's okay. All right, I got a few minutes here, and I got a bunch more stuff. So let's move on to some of the other topics here. In case you haven't noticed, the economy still sucks. Coal and electric rates skyrocketing and everything else. On top of all that, hey, guess what? The labor participation rate still bottoming out here at 62.8%. So we still have, in theory, 37.2% of the American public who is able-bodied Americans who are not working. We're over one-third of Americans who are able to work cannot work because they cannot find a job or because they don't want to work for the wages that are being offered. Whatever. But the point is, there's a lot of people who are not working. That's not good. Not. I pulled up some of my graphs that I like to look at over at Real Clear Politics. And I think this one's interesting, the direction of the country graph. If you go over to Real Clear Politics, one of the cool things they do, I love that they aggregate polls together. And that helps average out anomalies and some of the bogus polls and, you know, bad methodologies, outliers, goofiness, right? And so one thing that's very interesting to me is the direction of the country poll. We started out with 70% of Americans at it's probably the election. Beginning of 2009. The beginning of 2009, right before Obama gets inaugurated here, direction of the country, 65.4% said we were on the wrong track. And, you know, by June of 2009, it had basically leveled out. It was 46 to 46. Since that time, if you drew a line and averaged it out over the next 4 years, four plus years, you would see that there are far more people, not far more, but the trend is up, that people now believe we are still on the wrong track. That accounting for the trend and everything else, the American public still believes that we're going the wrong way. You look at Obama's approval numbers. Basically, he fell upside down at the beginning of 2010. And yeah, he had some ups and downs here. And of course, he had his up during his reelection. But since the election, since April of 2013, he's been on the wrong side again. over 53, almost 54% of Americans believe they disapprove of Obama and of his actions, and only 42.3% agree. And that's going to be interesting to see the effect on this upcoming 2014 election cycle. I think that that's bad news for Democrats because it doesn't look like this gap, this approval gap, is going to shrink anytime soon. Now, it could. It could. The last time he had bad approval, it took, let's see, how long was this? About 4 months to close the gap. And seeing that we're in June, well, it's technically possible. If the gap were to start closing tomorrow, it could make a lot of races competitive in November. But as things stand right now, I don't think the Democrats are in great shape this year because there's a lot of people who disapprove of Obama, and there's a lot of people who tie the Democratic Party, to Obama, he's a Democrat. All right, let's see. Got a couple minutes left. I want to hit a few of these. The funniest story I've read in a long time, this is from a couple of weeks ago now, but the funniest story that I've read in a long time is that the NSA was basically announced or ordered by the courts to release information, Freedom of Information Act stuff, and also preserving information of what they're doing over there. And essentially their response was that we're too big and it would be too much of a burden to keep track of the information that we're keeping track of. What? The headline from Reason on this was the NSA says they're too big and too disorganized to comply with court orders. And I just, it's amazing to me. You know, if you or I disobeyed a court order saying it's too hard, we'd be thrown in the clink pretty darn quick. That's nice. It's too hard. Well, guess what? You have to anyway, because the court says so. I assume you've all seen, there's a story going around about the guy who's been summoned to family court. He's currently deployed overseas. And they're threatening punitive action against him for failure to appear while he's deployed. Absolutely insane. Meanwhile, the NSA, in trying to comply with lawsuits and the outcome of lawsuits, we're too big to do that. We don't want to. Thank you. Never mind. Another story that's this is a few months old, is about the checkpoints in America and how we're setting up all these gates inside of America now to verify whatever. And it's really just an expansion of what we've always done for a long time anyway, which are these checkpoints that, the DUI checkpoints or drug checkpoints or driver safety checkpoints or whatever you want to call them. Right now, Kentucky this week, I heard the ads this weekend. They were doing the Kentucky safety something or other, where the state patrol was going to be out checking to make sure you're wearing a seatbelt and driving safely. And it's not about writing tickets. It's about making sure you're safe. But we're going to write a whole bunch of tickets. And, guess what? That was funded by the federal government, not by a state. Don't worry. It's free money. It was federal. Whatever. The point is, and understand, I'm not for people driving irresponsibly, but I get annoyed with the ad campaigns. I get annoyed with the, we're in this to help you. We're certainly not in this to get money. Oh, yeah, sure, right. Please. Tell me another story, whatever. If you're not in it for money, how about you donate every dollar of those fines to some charity? Huh? Yeah, it was free money anyway, right, to have you out there? So donate all those fines to a charity. Yeah, it's not about money. Yeah, right. Anyway. Speaking of internal checkpoints, something going on now, which is interesting, is through banking regulations. They're calling it Operation Choke Point, where the Department of Justice is blocking businesses from being able to do banking. This kind of started, the first I heard about it was the marijuana folks out in Colorado. They weren't able to get bank accounts. But it's apparently moving on to other things like gambling and prostitution and other things that are frowned upon. And they're making it really hard for people to have bank accounts, which I think is kind of stupid, really, because one of the ways the IRS is able to find people who are tax cheats, I mean, you know, some of these businesses are kind of on the side. You know, one of the ways you can find tax cheats is that they deposit money and then they don't pay taxes on it. So the money came from somewhere. I mean, that's one of the ways they, I don't understand how keeping people from having a bank account solves anything, whatever. They are doing it punitively. It's done to be a pain in the butt to people, and that's why it's being done. One more quick thing here, and then we're going to, man, I have so much more, but we're going to do one more quick thing. Interesting story from American Thinker. It's a blog entry about how the misinformed electorate imperils us all. And this gets to the broader topic of what I've said for a while now, is that there are serious misinformation and disinformation campaigns out there that are specifically targeting you to make you dumber on purpose so that you end up going one way or another in electoral politics. Make no mistake, there are people specifically out putting lies out online to push their agendas. Be laughable, it's easy to debunk right off the bat. But some of it's actually, you know, well done. It's the whole correlation thing, and oh, well, that sounds kind of right. I mean, I guess. And, you know, oh, well, this guy wrote a really interesting long story. Oh, look, a YouTube video. You know, there's a serious campaign on to mess with your head. So this story that's out there points out a handful of interesting statistics. Only 4% of Democrats and 31% of Republicans knew that the top 1% of income earners do pay a higher average federal tax rate than the middle class. And I'm not going to go into the proofs of all this. I'm just going to tell you that these are the things that they are that way. Only 18% of Democrats and 58% of Republicans knew that the federal government spends more money on social programs like Medicare, education, food stamps, etc., than on national defense. Roughly 60% of all federal spending is for social programs. I knew that. 28% of Democrats, 41% of Republicans knew that the air in the U.S. is less polluted than it was 30 years ago. That's short-term memory syndrome right there. I mean, pretty sure everybody knows that the U.S. is less polluted. Voters and 41% of Republican voters. These are the people that are voting. Scary. 23% of Republican voters knew that the earth was generally warmer than it was 30 years ago, while 74% of Democrats said it was as well. You know, there is a slight warming trend over 30 years, but, you know, again, and I'm not going to get into a global warming debate, but the point is that over 30 years, that data set, it is slightly warmer. And yes, I know you can do 100 years, 50 years, 10 years to get different results. I know. Not going there. Only 10% of Republican voters and 37% of Democratic voters knew that Social Security's financial challenges do not stem from politicians looting the trust fund. Anyway, and then they go into how looting's a misnomer and how they're just borrowing against it, blah, 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 blah. But the point is, there is a war on for your mind. And there are people that are intentionally polluting your mind with bad information to get you to vote a certain way or to support a certain policy. It's important to know this so that you can give all the news articles, all the stories, all the Facebook memes and tweets and all that stuff the proper level of scrutiny. That's really the point. These things are no different than the stupid mass forwarded emails that you used to get from all, I mean, at least I did, got from everybody. In like 6-year waves, every time a new wave of people would get on the internet, I get the same stupid, did you know that something happened? And I mean, it's no different than the Jado car out. I mean, these myths are so bad. The Mythbusters show was built all about, you know, knocking these things down. And Snopes is dedicated, and a couple of others are dedicated to knocking these things down. That's how bad they got. And now Snopes is moving on to Facebook memes, but the Facebook memes move so fast, you can't hardly keep up with them. And that's on purpose, too. All right, I'm way over. We're taking a break. We'll be back in a few minutes. You are listening to Liberty Unbridled, the My View Matters radio network. If you want to call, 858-683-1326. Now's the time. 858-683-1326. Back in a moment.
First impressions aren't the most important thing. They're the only thing. At Ernie's Print Shop, we'll produce what you need to represent your company professionally. Right now, you can get 1,000 full-color business cards, 1,000 4x6 postcards, or a 3x5 banner for just $60. You choose. Check us out at erniesprintshop.com. Ernie's Print Shop. Over 50 years, one source, one solution. erniesprintshop.com. 502-969-8585.
Victim of crime is no joke, but you do have options that can help you avoid becoming a victim. I'm Ed Springsteen of the My View Matters radio show, and on behalf of myself and co-host Ed Martin, I urge each of you to help us fight against crime. You can do your part by calling Crime Stoppers at 582-CLUE. Since 1982, Crime Stoppers has helped get over 23,000 criminals off the street with your help. Working together, we can make a difference to take our streets back. Please call Crime Stoppers at 582-CLUE, or you can visit them online at www.582clue.com. Remember, Crime Stoppers always offers up to a $1,000 reward. Get involved and help make a positive change in your neighborhood. Thanks.
Advertisers, here's a great way to reach a quality audience. Get heard on My View Matters and make some noise in the marketplace.
Email myviewmatters@aol.com for advertising opportunities. Make a sound investment.
All right, folks, we're back. You are listening to Liberty Unbridled on the My View Matters Radio Network. And if you'd like to call in, 858-683-1326. Again, 858-683-1326. And I am working on a deadline of a drop dead at 8 o'clock on the nose. So I'm with no further ado, we're bringing co-host Dave in. Co-host Dave, how you doing, sir?
Doing awesome, Ken. Thank you.
So your thoughts. What's the first thing you want to tackle?
I'd say start right over there with the smoking ban and the discussion on correlation versus causation. You know, I thought that we had evolved as a people, and it's becoming more and more clear to me that we are evolving, but in some ways we're going a little backwards.
Right.
There for a while, everybody at every level in education throughout the country was talking about that, and I got a little bit of a head start on it, I guess. I got introduced to, I was very interested in psychology in junior high, and so that's when I started, you know, looking into it. But I guess it's a little bit shocking to me that there are so many people that just don't get it. So for the uninitiated, one of the highest correlations that we all know of in our country is the correlation between heat, humidity, and violent crime.
Yeah.
We all know that one doesn't cause the other, but it doesn't take a genius to figure out, you know, that those correlations are there. They are real, and they do mean something. And they can, you know, they can help. They can help combat problems a little bit, anyway. But yeah, correlation does not equal causation.
Yeah, you know, I've often joked that, you know, politics is policy and psychology wrapped in a popularity contest. And, you know, these days it seems that there's a whole lot less policy and a whole lot more psychology going on. It's not about actually putting forth solutions. It's about freaking people out or convincing them that somebody else is wrong or, you know, confusing people or whatever. It seems to be that in many ways our politicians have declared a psychological war on the electorate.
Yeah. I agree. And I think part of what really kind of muddies the waters is that both sides, and by both sides, I'm not, you know,
right,
intentionally dividing the country, you know, into A, you know, categories A and B, but both sides of any issue, and in politics, you know, both sides of any issue, it kind of muddies the water that both sides are doing this, you know, the engaging in the misinformation campaign, engaging in the, you know, the correlation talk, and just implying, sometimes outright lying, you know, and stating, you know, that one causes the other, but usually being slick, you know, and implying. For example, one correlation that is undeniable, the numbers are there, they're easy to check, that is just stupid obvious. It's not related to cause, is the disproportionately large amount of registered members of a particular political party that correlates in a very positive manner, meaning when one goes up, the other goes up, with the perpetrators of mass crimes. So mass shootings, for example, the shooters tend to have a very high correlation between being a shooter and mass casualty and being registered a particular political party, you know, in our country. And before I, you know, get anybody calling in and, you know, crying foul, I point that out as a preposterous example, you know, of the fallacy between correlation and causation. Your registered political party does not have anything whatsoever to do with how likely you are to commit a crime.
Yes. Being a registered Democrat does not mean that you're going to commit a mass murder. Let's just put that out there right there. You know, it is interesting. I mean, some of that stuff's interesting, and maybe it provides one small clue into what's going on, but it can't prove causation. That's a really big deal. I mean, again, you know, not to belabor the point, but causation is a very, very, very high bar on purpose, because when you say that X causes Y, you are damning X to always causing Y. I mean, that's what you're saying. X causes Y. Causation. And so it is an extremely high bar on purpose.
And I think the solution to it, you know, it lies in all of us. You know, and that being the burden of proof, you know, lies on, you know, the person making the claim.
Right.
So, you know, if we hear somebody say, or an organization or a party or whatever it happens to be, you know, say that X causes Y, you know, it's up to us to not to be belligerent or impolite, but, you know, to very politely stand up as concerned citizens and say, okay, I'm willing to hear you out. Now, tell me why.
Right. Yeah.
And if all they can do is continue to spout the correlations, you know, well, then, you know, we've got a problem. You know, heat doesn't cause violent crime. We all know that.
Right. Yes. Using energy causes heat. That's
true.
Causal. But, and that's the point, right? I mean, there are things that are facts and there are things that are theories. And even theory, I'm not going to use properly in the right scientific term, because there's a scientific standard for theory too. But the point is that causation is a really high bar. There are things that do cause other things, right? You know, if I jump off a bridge on, you know, 100 feet onto blacktop, chances are pretty darn good I'm not going to make it, right? If I tie an anchor to my ankle and throw myself overboard, I will probably drown. You know, those are things that X is causing Y. Right, it's you know, a sudden stop at the bottom of a large fall onto something very hard, or, you know, sinking and being asphyxiated. That's causal, right? That's harm. It's causal. It's whatever. Prove that. We know that will happen because the body cannot withstand those conditions. But I get really frustrated when people try to say, you know, I mean, we just saw this again. Now we're back to the butter versus margarine fight again. I mean, it's back again. And they're saying, don't eat margarine, eat butter. Again. You know, and then we have the salt fights. We have all these different fights. Oh, don't drink diet soda, because the diet soda actually causes the pancreas to go nuts and it actually messes you up worse. And I mean, arg! All this stuff gets reported as fact, and the reality is we don't know.
And I'm really glad that you brought that point up about, you know, the examples. You know, if you tied an anchor to your foot, jump to the water, you know, if you jumped off a 100-foot, you know, balcony, that kind of thing. I'm glad you brought that up, because there's also a difference there, because those are examples of probability. And probability is
right.
different than a correlational study, which is different than causation. And so this all brings
yep.
me back to, a lot of, the study that I've gone through, which I find particularly interesting. I find all of this to be very intriguing. You can get me going for hours on this. But for the uninitiated, case studies are a wonderful thing. So just a quick lesson. If you have a correlation and it's very high, that does seem to point to causation, and it could lead one to develop what you would consider a universal theory. So it applies in all contexts to this particular issue. And that's exactly what's being done in the political landscape, right now, is those universal theories are being presented, through correlations. Well, everybody gets familiar with the big benefit to case study. The benefit to case study, meaning one individual case, is if you have one individual case where the correlation does not exist, you blow the universal theory out of the water. It's dead and it's gone. You can no longer hold it as a universal theory. So, for example,
right.
I'm sitting on covered porch right now, and it's in the Cincinnati area, and it's rather hot and it's rather humid, and I am not committing a violent crime. So,
right.
There we go. We have a case study, blows the universal theory out of the water. I have a friend that's a registered Democrat, and she has not committed a mass shooting, nor do I believe that there's any probability of that happening in her lifetime. And so there's a case
right.
study right there. Done deal. That universal theory is out of the water. But don't throw the correlational studies away. Sometimes they are important. Sometimes they do indicate things, and they help us to figure out the third variable problem, which, and Ken, I know about that, and I've heard you talk about it before. So I'll let you pick up on that if you want to.
No, go ahead. I'm sorry. I got distracted for a moment. Anyway.
All right.
People.
Well, so one of the biggest benefits to, continuing to pay attention, to correlations rather than just toss them outright, if you have a case study that disproves the universal theory, is it does help you to start to figure out the third variable problem. One of our issues in our country, socially and politically especially, is that we're very, very dualistic, meaning we tend to think of things as black or white. We don't really leave room for shades of gray. And the political landscape over the last several years has gotten particularly divisive. So don't throw out the baby with the bathwater, so to speak. If you have all, several case studies even that obviously disprove the universal theory, don't throw away what you can learn from the correlational studies, because they can help you figure out solutions, and they may even eventually lead you to a cause, and that's what I was referring to in regards to the third variable. So we're dualistic. We think
yeah.
it's either A or B, but it could be that C is happening and has, an effect on both and is actually, impacting both A and B. But since we're only looking at A and B and we're not even looking for C, we never find it, and, we wind up, assuming that A causes B or B causes A.
Or not even C, but C and D and E are all factors that in the right combination cause when A happens,
yep.
when C, D, and E are in the right phase of the moon or whatever. I mean, it can get really complex. I mean, there are a lot of variables, and especially when you're talking about humans. I mean, we're a lot of cells and DNA and information floating around inside of us that, specifically when it comes to the smoking ban fight, people like to talk about cancer and those type of things. Certainly, I am not here to say that smoking does not cause cancer. I am here to say that you have not definitively proven that it does. And that's my beat. there is a lot of correlation. The probability studies are there. I believe it gives you a 10% or 10 times higher rate of there is a 10 times higher rate of lung cancer in smokers than in non-smokers. And I believe that takes it from a 1 in 10,000 to a 1 in 1,000. I can't remember. I remember these numbers off the top of my head, so if they're a little off, I apologize.
Yeah, it's somewhere around there.
But the point is that that doesn't prove causation, because what else are those smokers being exposed to? What other lifestyles are or lifestyle choices are consistent with those, or not consistent, but seen correlated with those that of why you would want to choose to start smoking? I mean, there's so many variables
right.
involved in all of this. Unless you're willing to take identical twins and put one in a bubble and expose one to something and then wait 60 years and see what happens.
That's what I was going to say. You're bringing up another really, really important point, and I think it might be getting buried a little bit there. So, you know, I just want to shine a little light on it, you know, which is the studies that you're referring to are very real, but those are studies mm-hmm. of smokers. The primary issue in the smoking bans is secondhand smoke.
Yeah.
And there are no studies.
Actually, there is
are
a
no studies.
There's
well,
a new
aggregate study
of probability. Yeah. Go ahead.
I know the one that you're referring to. But what I'm saying is all of the knowledge that we have, you know, thus far, unless you're intimately familiar with that one study, you're probably familiar with hundreds upon thousands of other studies that have been pushed down our throats for years and years. At this point in the game, you know, you go back and you look at it, and it's very easy to confuse it with secondhand smoke, and that is not
right.
what they're referring to. The numbers that you just threw out, those are studies of smokers. That did not come
yeah.
from a study of secondhand smoke.
Right.
And that,
no.
you know, so there's the other issue. You know, you have a third variable issue that's happening, you know, here, and they're, you know, indicating that the third variable is, you know, which they haven't even figured anything out about yet, you know, is causing, you know, all of these other things, which, you know, we know, you know, and we're not going to dispute, you know, in smokers, you know, but for those exposed to secondhand smoke, we don't know that. That's pure conjecture.
Right. And we're out of time, Dave. I apologize. I got a hard stop, brother. So I thank you for calling in and participating and running the show for us. Folks, thank you for tuning in tonight. This has been another edition of Liberty Unbridled. Turn in again next week, Sunday, 7 p.m. Eastern time. If you're listening to us on the podcast, listen to us live. Trust me, we like to have your calls. We like to have your interaction. But until next time, listen to the other shows on the network Monday through Thursday at 7 p.m. Eastern time as well. And until next time, this has been Ken Ullman for another edition of Liberty Unbridled on the My View Matters Radio Network. Have a good week, folks.